It's The Current's Music News, the weekly podcast where we tell you what you need to know about what's going on in the music world. It's Friday, May 31st. I'm Jay Gabler.
And I'm Jade, and Jay and I just saw the new biopic about Elton John, and it's called Rocketman, and we're going to tell you all about it, our thoughts, our feelings, emotions, so much.
We had a lot of feelings. But first, let's look back at this week in music history. This week in 1956, Buddy Holly went to a movie theater in Lubbock, Texas, and saw The Searchers. That's the John Ford Western where John Wayne's character says, "That'll be the day." A few days later, Buddy Holly said to Jerry Allison, the future Crickets drummer who saw the movie with him, that the two should write a song together. And Allison responded jokingly, "That'll be the day." A half hour later, the pair had a song that would hit the top of the pop chart the following year. This week in 1992, Paul Simon and Edie Brickell were married in Montauk. They'd been dating for 3 years, and their first child was born in December of that year. Paul Simon had just played a controversial show in South Africa, facing protesters who were still angry that he'd broken the cultural embargo to record his album Graceland. He was also working on new songs for his Broadway musical, The Cape Man. Edie Brickell had recently retired her group New Bohemians to live a more settled life, but she would launch her solo career with the album Picture Perfect Morning 2 years later. I haven't learned to say goodbye. Hello itself is hard enough. It kills to let a good thing die. By 1999, the Welsh band Manic Street Preachers had released two commercially and critically successful albums, 1996's Everything Must Go and 1998's This Is My Truth, Tell Me Yours, with its big hit, If You Tolerate This, Your Children Will Be Next, with the latter taking home the 1999 Brit Awards for Best British Album and Best British Band, and they were nominated for the Mercury Prize that year. But the thing that makes us remember them the most from that year was a gig that they turned down. The concert was a televised outdoor festival attended by 10,000 people to mark the opening of the National Assembly for Wales. What would make the band turn down this huge show? The guest list, which included the Queen, the Duke of Edinburgh, and the Prince of Wales. And why? The band spokeswoman at the time said it simply. They turned it down because they have never and will never play in front of the monarch. The future teaches you to be alone. The present to be afraid and cold. So if I can't you grab. Okay, let's take a look at a few of this week's music news stories. New data show that in 2017, the most recent year for which numbers are available, record labels collectively spent $5.8 billion to sign, develop, market, and promote artists.
Whoa! What is this? The 60s? The 90s? This is happening now?
That's a lot of money, yeah. It's up 30% in just 2 years, amounting to nearly a quarter of total industry revenues.
This is shocking to me because in my mind, there's just no money in the music industry anymore.
Well, actually, the music industry is doing okay with streaming revenue going up, but the problem is that labels are getting less and less of it. Basically, artists have more power in 2017, 2018, 2019, because with social media and digital distribution platforms, they just don't need labels as much as they used to. That means that bidding wars for artists get higher and higher, and so labels need to spend more money to get artists on their rosters.
So what's in it for the labels?
Basically, what's always been in it for the labels, right? The labels make a share of revenue, and depending on how they cut the deal, they can get a share of revenue for concert performances, merch, all of this. But I mean, basically, record labels right now are just trying to survive and stay relevant. Because if you're an artist right now, I mean, we're going to talk about Lil Nas X in a sec. He, you know, self-produced, wrote, recorded Old Town Road, and now it's a massive smash. He didn't need the help of any record label to do that. So if you're a record label now, you're really trying to make your case to artists that they need you. And one way you can make your case is by writing
dollar,
a check.
Dollar bills.
Maybe it's too early to call the song of the summer, but the huge momentum behind the viral Lil Nas X hit Old Town Road shows absolutely no sign of slowing.
No, and it's been going for a while.
The song is featured in a new trailer for Sylvester Stallone's, yes, this is seriously a movie that has happened and is coming out. It's called Rambo Last Blood.
All right. Yep. Okay.
And a video of Lil Nas X surprising a gym full of Ohio kids shows that today's elementary students know literally every word of this song. The popularity of the song's duet remix, which currently sits atop the Billboard 100 for an eighth week, has made the song Billy Ray Cyrus's biggest hit.
Since Achy Breaky Heart or like ever?
Ever.
What?
Achy Breaky Heart didn't even hit number one. It peaked at number four. And Old Town Road has been number one for 8 weeks. As a matter of fact, our colleague Jesse Wise and I were just looking this up. Old Town Road, featuring Billy Ray Cyrus, is now the biggest single hit by any member of the Cyrus family.
Whoa, take that, Miley.
Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse to the Old Town Road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I'm gonna take my horse to the Old Town Road. I'm gonna ride till
it's a bumper week for book news, not all of it happy news. Let's start with the bad news, at least for Moby. He's canceled his book tour behind his new memoir, Then It Fell Apart, which turns out to be all too aptly named.
Yikes. Yeah. Well, I mean, this is kind of a lesson in how not to unveil your book in 2019.
Yeah. Not only did he mischaracterize his relationship with Natalie Portman, according to her, but then when she made a statement saying as much, he responded with all sorts of indignant, defensive statements, and it was all just snowballed. And now Moby says he's going to go away for a while, and he acknowledges, quote, there is obviously no one else to blame but me. In happier news, Debbie Harry has announced that her long-awaited memoir, Face It, will be published October 1st.
I'm very excited for this one. I mean, she knew everybody. She has the dirt, and she's been holding on to it this long. I am ready for Debbie Harry to spill some tea.
She's already saying she has more than enough stories for multiple books. So if this book does well, we will be hearing even more from the 73-year-old Blondie frontwoman. Iggy Pop is also publishing a book, but in his case, it's a book of lyrics. Till Wrong Feels Right, which also hits shelves on October 1st, takes its title from a 2003 song by the punk legend. According to publisher Penguin Random House, quote, coinciding with the 50th anniversary of the first and eponymous The Stooges record, this new book will bring together for the first time his selected lyrics, beautifully illustrated with artwork, photos, and complete with his and others' reflections on a genre-defining music career.
I took a beating when I saw my TV play it. I saw my TV play it over and over, and there was no escape.
Does anybody miss the iPod? The handheld music player was introduced in 2001 after Apple decided that all the existing digital music machines were, quote, big and chunky or small and useless, with user interfaces that were unbelievably awful. The tech giant wanted us to hold, as their slogan went, 1,000 songs in your pocket. Now, I remember those iconic ads with a shadow dancing wildly against techno color backgrounds with catchy songs like Jets, Are You Gonna Be My Girl? And I really could not wait to get my hands on my iPod Nano. But now, well, times have changed, and now I have a slim and light device that lets me send any type of correspondence I want to immediately. I can access all the knowledge of the known world. I can take very cute selfies. Do I really need a separate device to simply play tunes when I've got an app for that? Well, in 2019, Apple is banking on you wanting to simplify your life and maybe reach for the nostalgia of the iPod. The seventh generation iPod Touch is said to run twice as fast as its previous model due to an A10 Fusion chip. According to Apple's website, the A10 Fusion chip brings up to twice the performance and three times better graphics to the new iPod Touch 2 while still delivering great battery life if that's something that works for you. The new iPod, it's out now.
I've seen techies on Twitter howling about the fact that not only is Apple rolling out a retro iPod, just retro insofar as it's not a phone, it has a headphone jack.
Ooh, wow, nostalgia is real.
Come with me because you look so fine that I really want to make you mine.
In a second, we're going to talk about Rocket Man, and it seems like we spent half of last year talking about the Queen biopic Bohemian Rhapsody. Well, the biopic flood isn't going to stop anytime soon. Get ready for upcoming movies about The Beatles, Marvin Gaye, and Boy George, plus documentaries like a Martin Scorsese film about Bob Dylan's Rolling Thunder review and a Showtime film about the Go-Go's. What's behind the biopic boom? Well, obviously, a pure love for the music, right? It's just about the music. Oh, well, yes. Also, it's about money. As a new Billboard cover story points out, musicians, estates, and labels are pushing movies for the same reason they're making ever bigger tours happen. Traditional record revenue isn't what it used to be, despite the streaming boom, and so the music industry is looking to capitalize on other revenue streams. Don't think any of this is easy, though. Jeff Jempel, who manages several late stars' estates, says that, quote, putting together a biopic is like organizing a box of snakes. You've got to please the estate, you've got to please the heirs, you've got to please the label and the studio. Licensing obviously can be a nightmare, and you've got to have the songs, as the producers of the movie Jimmy All Is By My Side learned. Do you remember that one, Jade?
No, I don't. And that name is giving me no clues. Was it about Jim Morrison? I have no idea.
Jimi Hendrix, starring Andre 3000.
Ooh, which is a perfect casting.
You would think, but they didn't have the Jimi Hendrix songs.
So what did they do?
They just used other songs of the era. They couldn't show him playing Jimi Hendrix songs. So yeah, that's why the movie flopped. But biopics can be big business. Bohemian Rhapsody has now raked in over $1 billion. Okay, speaking of biopics, let's talk Rocket Man, the new Elton John biopic directed by Dexter Fletcher, who is actually the guy who came in and replaced Bryan Singer as director of Bohemian Rhapsody after he was fired from that movie.
And this is a guy who knows how to tell the story. In fact, I like that we're kind of juxtaposing these two films because I felt like this was a film that Bohemian Rhapsody wanted to be. It had the glitz and the glamour, but also that raw honesty that was kind of lax in the Bohemian Rhapsody film. You know, they kind of did this watercolor of it, whereas this was like, nope, I'm going to toss some glitter on it, but this is real.
I think the thing that I was most immediately surprised by, I hadn't realized this was going to be the case, it's not exactly a conventional biopic. It tells the story of Elton John's life, yes, with Taron Egerton portraying Reginald Dwight, but it sort of melds the songs being presented in a conventional performance context. You do see Elton John singing and writing these songs, but then it sort of bleeds into this alternate type of movie that's more like a jukebox musical. So you might see Elton John start to perform a song in a performance context, but then it turns into a musical number with people getting up, singing, dancing. Other characters start singing lines, and they sort of use his songs, sometimes presented out of the order in which they would have actually been written and performed in his career, to tell the story of his life.
I honestly think in about a year, perhaps 2 years, we will see the musical Rocket Man. I mean, there's one number where the whole set looks like a stage presentation, and then how the actors are sort of edging their bodies towards the audience, it makes it feel like you are just watching a musical on stage.
I've got to say, I didn't think that Elton John was going to be as fascinating a character as he turned out to be. Of course, he's a great entertainer. Everybody loves his songs. But I feel like he hasn't had as much attention as a person as someone like Freddie Mercury has.
Well, yeah, because he is A, still alive, and B, I think because he is such a theatrical person, that sort of shimmer and shine takes away from everything that was happening behind the scenes. And can I just say, spoiler alert, did not know that Elton John had gotten married to a woman at one point in his life.
Yeah, and that's a relatively small part of Rocket Man, as opposed to in Bohemian Rhapsody, where it's sort of like the central plot involves Freddie Mercury's marriage to a woman that, you know, ends up ending. But really, the central drama, I think, as it seemed to me in Rocket Man, is really Elton John versus himself. It's really Elton John coming to terms with who he is and getting the help he needs to take ownership of his own mental health.
Yeah, and it's sort of cute at the end because Elton John did have such a hand in the creation of this film and sharing his story that at the end it's like, hey, look, you know, everything turned out all right for me. And shows real pictures of Elton John from his life and pointed up against moments from the movie. It's just a movie that lifts you up and makes you feel happy and hopeful. And it's also just fun and lively, but there's real sadness in it.
You would think that having the artist alive and really hands-on involved in the making of a biopic would lead to something feeling potentially very safe and sterile and not going there and just being very flattering. But it feels like, especially if you set this up against Bohemian Rhapsody, which is the obvious point of comparison, it feels like Elton John's involvement let this movie take risks that you might not have taken if you couldn't show a scene to the artist and say, does this feel right to you?
Yeah, this is a fun movie, but also, like you were saying, Jay, just completely raw and tells his life story as it is. So the movie's out now. You can share your thoughts in the music news section over at thecurrent.org. Let's check out some of the new music that's coming out this week. There is something bubbling up in Kentucky. Sturgill Simpson came out of that scene. There are so many others, and the new buzz name to know from the Kentucky scene is Ian Noe. The Kentucky native sings about life as he sees it for the downtrodden, the hardworking, the forgotten stories of the Appalachian people. Working on Between the Country with Dave Cobb, who's the go-to producer in Nashville. He's worked with Brandi Carlile, Maren Morris, Shooter Jennings, most recently Jason Isbell. Noe has created this series of vignettes that feel like a stumbled-upon classic from days gone by. Take a listen to Letters to Madeline.
Looked like 100 guns held on me, hunkered by the ship, a Detroit general and company. Calling boy, come out, we have you, Jill.
Beside the bookshop. Warm, door, intelligent, and intimate. Bedouin's music evokes the classic singer-songwriter sounds of Carole King, Gordon Lightfoot, and Joni Mitchell. Her sophomore album, Bird Songs of a Killjoy, adds new instrumental color to the sparse acoustic aesthetic of her 2017 debut. You might hear some familiar voices handling harmonies. Lucius are among the album's guests. Appropriately, the Los Angeles-based artist adds a little vocal echo to Echo Park, her tribute to the beloved neighborhood.
Sun is rising on another cafe, weekends in Echo Park don't make a difference, so it seems.
Soundwalk Collective and Patti Smith have an album out together called The Peyote Dance. The Berlin-based avant-garde Found Sound Collective seeks out experimental noise. They have taken sounds from a Moscow nightclub. They recorded a shaman in the Amazon rainforest. They delicately dangled a microphone over the Black Sea just to get the sound of gentle and rough waves. This is a band that goes to the limits to get the sounds they want. And with Patti Smith, they went to collect sounds in the canyons of northern Mexico. So the album itself is a journey, with Smith reciting the thoughts and words of French writer and director Antonin Artaud. It's at turns terrifying, surreal, and mind-opening. The closing track is a calming wander called Ivory.
In this solitary cell, clouded with light, sitting straight at his length, burgeoning flame, a flower.
The latest word in krautrock is a British Sudanese American musician. And no, he doesn't sing in German. Sinkane's work occupies the intersection of rock, jazz, funk, and electronica. You may not have heard of him, but for a sense of how cool this guy is, he's the music director of a William Onyebar cover band with David Byrne, Blood Orange, Damon Albarn, and Pharoah Sanders. Sinkane's new album, De Pace, takes its title from a French word suggesting disorientation. He calls it the story of an immigrant's journey of self-discovery in the Trump era. The music is loud and raw, he continues, and it's bursting with an energy unlike anything I've done before. Here's an uplifting track called Everybody.
Everybody!
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 Like a lot of the viral clips we feature on the podcast, this week's takes some explaining. So, Billie Eilish. Teenager of the Year, according to Rolling Stone. DIY sensation. First major music star to be born in the 21st century. The biggest single from her debut album is a song called Bad Guy, and it's proving endlessly mutable, spawning memes left and right.
And not only is the song kind of hilarious just in and of itself, just because she does this great duh at a point, but that's the point that everybody takes over, and then they've decided that this backing music that she's using reminds them of something else.
So, for example, they'll take that splice point, and they'll splice the music video with footage of other famous quote-unquote bad guys. Homer Simpson, Korg from Thor Ragnarok, a dancing Darth Vader. And then other people have made their own versions of the song by sampling sounds that include, yes, really, Billie Eilish's own belches and farts while eating hot sauce, because that's an interview she did. Basically, what we learned from all this is that the song is such a jam, that bass line is a banger with basically anything. The clip of all these that made me laugh the hardest is this one, where a guy syncs that beat with samples of Old Town Road, with Drag Race contestant Jasmine Masters, and even with dialogue from The Room.
Yeah.
And that is this week's bumper crop of music news. I'm Jay Gabler.
And I'm Jade.
Our producer is Anna Weigel. If you're enjoying this podcast, tell your friends and also tell them about The Current's new podcast, The Current Rewind. This week's episode looks at the history of Pachyderm Studios, kind of Minnesota's own Abbey Road, where Nirvana recorded In Utero. We'll be back next week with more music news headlines.
Oh, hi, Mark. Oh, hi, Mark. Oh, hi, Mark.